We may be joined by some additional people. It's interesting. Boston is, of course, I saw Lim Tran the other day. He's an old grantee from the Boston area. And, well, we'll talk about that in a second. Today's Lincoln's birthday, so I'm sorry, first of all, last time we had some technical difficulties. I think it was about the first time that happened where we got cut off, so I talked to myself for about 15 minutes before I realized that that's the problem when you don't have open discussion, you know. So, if I get cut off, that's the reason. And someone call me, and Glo, you can call me, and I'll call back in.
Yeah, okay.
What I thought we could do today, and one of the persons that was going to talk last week was Ray Sullivan. He's from the Northwest Regional Investment Board. And in the last week or so, we had two questions from some of the people, grantees, and one was about recruiting and assessment. They were just starting their next cycle, and they wanted to have additional, which we've talked about before, and Christine's done some great work in that area, about recruiting your class and assessing and assessment tools. But Ray, in fact, he emailed me, said it's Lincoln's birthday and I'm not going to be in the office. And I wrote back, well, you could call from home, but didn't get a response. So we'll probably do talk about assessment tools next time. We also had some questions about forming advisory committees, and we sent out some, Glo sent out some information from OAI about how to set up your advisory committee, and we talked about who you want on your advisory committee. I think we put that in some of the PLC notes, particularly for the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant. They're really, 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 they want working people who working people, meaning those who can contribute to your program, which are people in government that are associated with brownfields and environmental economic development, someone from training organizations, whether it's community colleges, universities, or a nonprofit, certainly someone from Workforce Investment Board, if it's not your organization already. And you want some employers, and the employers you want are those who may be hiring your students. Durham is an excellent example of that. They have a very active advisory committee, and their advisory committee is highly made up of employers, and they have meetings regularly. In fact, these their employers are pretty good friends now, and they've known each other for a while. And it's interesting, when you get emails, it's not from the grantees, it's actually from the employers sending out notices of meetings. So they really engage their advisory committees, and it works well, and it works well for the students that are graduating. They have a chance to interact with these advisory committee and employers at various social functions that they have and get-togethers. But what I thought we would do today is talk about a couple of things. One, I'd like to just give everyone a briefing on the Good Job, Green Jobs and what that was all about. That conference was Monday and Tuesday, and actually today they're going to be advocating on Capitol Hill, hopefully, for green jobs, and talk a little bit about that. And then we might talk a little, like put in perspective some of the programs out there that impact environmental training. There are a bunch of them, and we throw these words around often, and we sometimes don't explain who they are and how they fit into this whole area of job training. We always start off with any announcements from Washington. Glo, anything that you've heard lately?
Well, I actually talked to headquarters this morning on a couple of other issues, and so while I was on the phone with them, after we talked about their potential snow day for tomorrow, they said that, because tomorrow we know that the job training grants are due February 13th, and So what I was told is that a few proposals have trickled in, and more will probably come after this snowstorm. And so it sounds kind of like at this point in time, there's not a lot there, but I think that's pretty normal that, you know, everything comes toward the end of the grant period. So I have no idea how many they expect, neither do they, but just that they are trickling in.
Well, that's actually, I think that's good news for those for those people who are re-upping. That's awesome. And it'll help the odds. They've made this RFP so difficult that if you can respond to that RFP, you've got your program pretty much mapped out. I mean, it's really down there. And it seems like if you can answer all those questions and you've got your advisory committee set up and you've done all those things, and even if you haven't got them all done and you can sit down with other mentors and with the regional office and say, well, you're weak here, but you can improve that. I mean, after you get the funding, get some of these other things in line. If you're weak on your partners, get some more partners or your advisory committee or your curriculum. So that's probably EPA looked at it as not real good news, but boy, I think that's great news because we've had so many good communities that have done really good work, and there's just so many people up when they apply, it's sometimes it's tough. So, well, I'm going to repeat a few other announcements that we put in the notes, but I'll just reiterate them. The NIHS Greatest Institute, GLOW, I'm not sure that may be filled now.
I don't know. I haven't asked since the last time when I said that they had a few openings left, but I will email Patty and find out, and then, Mike, you can include that in the minutes from this phone conference. How's that?
I like to mention it. That's basically, and I'm going to talk a little bit about NIHS, but there is a Greatest Institute put on by CCCHST. They're kind of they're affiliated with us. It's a grant from National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, and they put on a boot camp every summer, and these are for HAZWOPR trainers. This is for people who are training, and they give them all kinds of curriculum resource materials, and it's free, and it's a great thing to get involved in for those out there that are doing, and everyone has to do HAZWOPR training. It's geared towards more for the trainer, not necessarily program managers. So, but that we'll put that announcement and link in there, and you might even if they are filled, you could get your name on a list. Some people sometimes drop out.
Yeah, and I think they do keep a waiting list too, just for that reason.
There are some grant opportunities. Now, these grant opportunities aren't necessarily for environmental workforce development and training, but they're things that you may look around and see. You may check them out and try to find out if there's a partner in your community that you may want to get involved in this. And because it's peripheral to what we're doing, but it's not directly involved. But they, for example, the 2014 Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Cooperative Agreement, it's about $120,000 a year. It's an EPA grant from the Environmental Justice Group. And it's aimed at environmental justice projects. Now it's not going to be a training project, but there is a linkage in terms of collaborating and working with some other people and leveraging what you're doing in your program with some of the EJ activities in your community. So it's something worth looking at. There's another grant that has been out there for years. They get their money from CERCLA, I believe. They get a little bit of money out of that foundation from polluters, but it's called EPA Environmental Education Fund, and they have about $2.7 million that they award every year. And the way this it's basically for projects, community projects. If you go to a fair and a 4th of July, and it's a It's a Earth Day fair. You can see people with posters and awareness documents. That's probably being funded by the EPA Environmental Education Grant. They are giving out two grants to three grants in every region. So if you're a region that doesn't have a lot of activity, it's something to, again, consider. And then headquarters gives out one or two big grants. And those actually, HMTRI had one of those, and they've had some regional grants. Those have gone more lately to larger associations. But I think the interesting thing here are these regional grants. They're two to three grants from every region. And not a lot of people avail themselves of these grants, and they're $75,000 to $200,000 grants. And again, it's not directly involved in your environmental job training program, but it might fund development of some awareness materials for the community. And you're doing community outreach anyhow. This community outreach would be more in towards environment and green jobs, and so it's worth looking at this and seeing if this might be something that your staff may want to get into to pick up some environmental education money. And there was a time when they were giving out smaller grants, and just about most people who applied for them, they were $5,000 or $10,000 grants. Just about everyone who applied for them got them. So they've changed that a little bit. Now it's a little more formal, but there is $2.7 million sitting there. One other thing I'd like to mention is that it's a reminder that I'll put in the notes is EPA is going to have a webinar. This is not from OSFOR or OBLR. It's EPA Grants and Debarment. Debarment is a nasty word, but this is the grants office. They're the ones. They're really good guys. And these are the people who administer the grants, and they track your grants for those of you who have grants. And they're going to have a webinar on February 19th from 2 to 3 p.m. It's all about applying for grants, about reporting to grants. It's more in general for EPA grants. But it's something, again, you may want to just tune in on your computer and see if there's anything there that you might be interested in. It might be worth downloading the PowerPoints that they're going to have. They're going to have question and answers about grants, about the application process, but also about the whole grant process in general. So it might be worth tuning in, and I'll put the link to that. Again, it's February 19th from 2 to 3 p.m. Our next session will be on the 26th, the following Wednesday. So with that, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Green Jobs for those who couldn't make it. The Green Jobs is an interesting organization. This is a very unusual organization. It's a coalition of organized labor and environmental groups. It started with the United Steelworkers, a gentleman named David Foster in 2006. He was president of United Steelworkers. And somehow he ended up in a debate with the Sierra Club. And they found that they were arguing at first, but then they realized that they had some things in common. And then the more they talked, the more they realized while they had differences, the environmental movement and the worker movement, organized labor, have a whole lot to gain. And while they have some internal differences, their strength can be very advantageous. So they formed the Blue-Green Alliance, Blue-Green Environmental and Working Organizations. Since then, United Steelworkers has been a mainstay for the Blue-Green Alliance, but also the Sierra Club has been a huge supporter. And since 2006, they've brought in 11 of the largest unions in America to join the Blue-Green Alliance, and they brought in the four largest environmental organizations, including the Sierra Club, who organized it originally, the Natural Resources Defense Council, NRDC, Union of Concerned Scientists, and the National Wildlife Foundation. So this is it's become a very big organization or alliance. If you take all these organizations and their membership, you're talking about 15 million people that belong either to organized labor or to these environmental organizations. And the unions include UAW, and the auto, United Steelworkers, utility workers, AFL-CIO, sheet metal workers, who include the people who build the airplanes, the transportation, air and rail, organized labor, Federation of Teachers. It's a huge organization. So every year they have a conference, just a two-day conference that in Washington, and the third day, most of the union or the organized labor people and the more politically involved, first 2 days are there's a certain amount of politics involved because, you know, these organizations that are belonging to it. But, and they have a lot of mayors, mostly all Democratic, and mayors and congressmen, and the administrator of EPA was there. They're usually someone from the interior. They had the current Secretary of State there last year. But they take the third day, which is Wednesday, and they're up now on Capitol Hill, and they all march down to Capitol Hill, and they talk about green jobs. And the topic this year was infrastructure. And this whole issue of and conflict between the trades and environment, and they said what happens is people who don't like to see this alliance say, you've got to choose between development or the environment. And they're saying, Blue Green Alliance says, no, it's good jobs and green jobs. And it's no use in having a good environment with no jobs, and it's no use in having jobs and a terrible environment. And I think the tone of this was well expressed. They said, Leo Girard's head of the United Steelworkers, and he is a very charismatic person. But he said, you know, we want to think about what kind, when I see my kids and my grandkids, I want them to be able to look at me and say, you know, Granddad, did you do everything you could to make our world a safe place and a healthy place to live? And he said, if I can't look them in the face and say I did, I feel that I've wasted a lot of my career. And this is from a union leader. This is the president of Steelworkers. He said, we want to leave our kids and grandkids a better place than we got it. And that's basically the setback of the Blue-Green Alliance. Every year they have this Good Jobs, Green Jobs conference, as I said, and with different all sorts of different workshops, a lot like the Brownfields conference that we hold every 18 months. This year's topic was infrastructure, and they're saying we've got a problem, and this all relates to their environmental workforce development. When we look at infrastructure, we're talking about the retrofitting and upgrading of infrastructure that's falling apart, and then we're talking about new construction. And that all fits into the brownfields. The retrofit and upgrade and remediation part is all about jobs that relate to fixing what's out there. And they're pointing out the people in the organized labor have good statistics on this. They said in Charleston, West Virginia, where that horrible spill took place, that was bad enough. But if you look at their water system, the water union said 30% of the clean water that would normally go to the households is leaked through the system. The infrastructure is so bad. They said there are places in urban communities where they still have wood water pipes. The problem is that the infrastructure, they could not turn the water off in Charleston, West Virginia, because if they did, the pipes would have collapsed. So they had to keep the water running. And even though it was being wasted. So the premise, they're pointing out that the state of our infrastructure is the country is falling apart. We've got the lowest cost of capital in the history of the United States, 0.3%. And we've got this huge unemployment rate in the construction industry. It's extremely high. Many construction workers are unemployed. They emphasize a lot about construction because of the labors, but our people in the environmental field are basically involved in construction with the environmental certifications. So these things go fairly close in the hand. And of course, they point out the importance of new construction. And the role of environmental workers in new construction. So it's something that you may want to get involved in is the Blue Green Alliance, and I'll put notes on their websites. You could see some of the presentations on YouTube, and YouTube's a great great source for checking out some things. Not only I'll put these buzzwords in there: Blue Green Alliance, the Good Jobs Green Jobs Conference, Leo Girard. Check it out on YouTube. While you're on YouTube, as I'd mentioned in the notes, you may also want to check out keywords like environmental workforce development and EPA environmental training, and you'll see some of the graduation ceremonies and some of the things that grantees have put up on YouTube. And it's something you may want to consider, is now it's easier than ever, and we probably should probably think about developing a channel just for our grantees, because you can go up on YouTube and see bits and pieces of what other grantees are doing up on YouTube, some of their graduations, some of their projects. Some of the things on YouTube are actually training videos that are up on YouTube on how to, for example, I watched one on working with sealing off an area prior to asbestos remediation. So it was a great video. So you might check on at the YouTube site. But one of the other things that that impressed me at this conference, one of the presentations, it was actually a presentation on environmental justice. And after the presentation was over, Dr. Beverly Wright from Dillard University in New Orleans got up. And Dr. Wright has been around for about 25 years. She worked with Robert Bullard, who wrote the original Cancer Alley, all the books on. He started, basically, was almost like Silent Spring in the environment. Robert Bullard was responsible for pointing out, overlaying the statistics of refineries and oil industry in the Gulf Coast, and overlaying the demographics and also the cancer rates, and the term Cancer Alley. And when you overlay the location of these facilities, why they're located there, and the demographics of the people who live there, and the morbidity of the people, they all overlay run on top of the other. And he's written several books about this environmental justice. And of course, EPA has an environmental justice program. And I'm going to put the website for the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice, which Beverly Wright and Robert Bullard are part of. But in your programs, it's something to consider, is this whole issue of environmental justice. We do work with underserved populations, and we are basically involved in environmental justice because we're training people who may not have an opportunity to be trained. And it's we try to keep close to what's going on in environmental justice. But the interesting thing, and this was at the Green Jobs Conference, when after it was all over, and Beverly Wright got up and said, "I want you to look at the panel presenting." She really is very outspoken. "There is not one person of color on this panel. There is only one person that comes to our community meetings, and one of the gentlemen has been going to the environmental justices in New Orleans for the last 20 years. She said, "You've got Asian representation on your panel. You've got Hispanic representation. You have no black representation on your panel." She said, "You know, the environmental justice movement was formed because of inequities to blacks, people of color. And while that's the beginning of it, we see," she says, she is seeing a move towards working with, and some of the presentations were working with displaced workers who were immigrants and undocumented people and rights for immigrants. And she said, where is the environment justice? Are we sliding off of this whole issue of black representation here?" She said, "There's an issue of white people having difficulty working with black populations because of cultural issues that are deep-rooted." And she said, "I would hate to see the environmental justice movement, which started with black environmental justice, move into environmental justice for everyone but black people. And it was an eye-opener, and it was interesting and something I had never heard before of this issue of addressing minorities and underserved populations, but not black populations. And it's interesting. And I don't know, she's speaking from her point of view, and she's speaking from someone who has been fighting for environmental justice for black people for her whole career. And she wants to make sure that that just doesn't get diluted. But it was an interesting observation. And, of course, the people on the panel, which was it was kind of an awkward moment, obviously, they kind of said, well, you know, you have a point. And they had invited someone that wasn't able to make it. But it was an interesting eye-opening session. And, of course, it reminds us all that while we're working on environmental justice, we have to consider all populations, all of them, and keeping that in mind. So that's kind of a little how this thing was. It was Leo Gerard. If you go to YouTube, listen to Leo Gerard's speeches, because he is out there, and they are very frank, and they talk about these issues. And so I would suggest going to YouTube. Last week, maybe after I was cut off, I talked about also checking out Year Up while you're on YouTube. I don't know how many of you watched 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago, but they talked about Year Up. And Year Up is just like our program, but it's two differences. One, it's for the financial sector, and two, it's privately funded. It's much easier to fund the financial sector, Goldman Sachs and Bank of America, and all the big banks are financing their program, but their program looks almost exactly like ours, except they have big backers, and their graduates are going to work for Goldman Sachs and for Bank of America and Morgan Stanley. There is a good video about the 60 Minutes presentation up on YouTube. So we've just got a couple minutes left, and we're going to, starting next week again, we're going to go back to talking to the different grantees and some of the wonderful things they're doing and how they're doing that. But I'm just going to finish up today with talking a little bit in perspective about EPA programs and about what's out there in general in the environment. And, of course, you all know about OSWER, Office of Solid Waste Emergency Response. If you're not too familiar with government, you can get confused by all these acronyms, but they're the organization that basically funds the Brownfields program. Closer to our project is OBLR, Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. That's where Joe works in that group, which is under OSWER. And they have, of course, Brownfields programs, and these are the actual infrastructure programs, which is the assessment programs, the revolving loan funds, which are for cleaning up their loan programs to clean up the programs, the areas that they identify as being polluted. They've actually got cleanup grants. And so in that infrastructure part of Brownfields has to do with finding the problem areas, figuring out a way to fund the cleanup and actually cleaning them up. And they also have some multi-purpose grants which combine the assessment and the cleanup of those. And they give out grants very similar to ours. And they usually are about 3 months ahead of ours, and we always suggest to our grantees to get in touch with those in the community involved in, particularly in the cleanup revolving loan fund and even the assessment grants, to see how you can work in tandem as partners. And of course, they have the job development grants and OBLR. There is a program, it's called Research Training and Technical Assistance, which is, we're involved in that program. And then they have a targeted Brownfields assessment program in OBLR, which is has to do with special situations, people that don't have brownfields grants. But those are, when you're looking at what's happening in EPA on brownfields, that's where they, that's all happening. You've got other things going on in other program offices. The way EPA is organized, you've got EPA and then you've got all these program offices. And OSWR is one, Office of Solid Waste Emergency Response. Air is another one, water, radiation. So they have these, they break it down by programs. And within these programs, there are sub-programs. So other things you're going to see thrown around are things like smart growth, the environmental justice, which I talked about, and about environmental education. And these are programs that are not in OSWR, but they're in the agency. The smart growth programs you hear about that we refer to sometimes are about city infrastructure, about getting cities to build rain gardens and pathways. Atlanta, for example, is turning old railroad yards into walkways around and bike paths around the city. So this is, smart growth is involved with encouraging people to smart growth, to develop their cities in a environmentally sound way. The environmental justice programs in EPA have to do with bringing underserved populations into the fold and how that relates to environment in their communities. And of course, environmental education, which I talked about, has to do basically with general environmental awareness among the population. There's some other programs out there that you probably are familiar with, some in EPA and some outside EPA. For example, NIHS is thrown around a lot, National Environmental Health Sciences. This NIHS is involved in health and safety of workers. And many of you, some of you, have both EPA grants and NIHS grants. And while the EPA grant is about a couple million dollars a year, the NIHS grant is about $20 million. It's a huge grant for training workers to be safe in their workplace. The interesting thing is we work together, and we try not to compete. In fact, they suggest that if you have an EPA job training grant, you have to make sure it's not in a community where there's an NIHS grant. And if you look at the curricula of both types of grants, they're fairly similar. They have all the health and safety programs. We do more in terms of environment, cleaning up the environment. They do more in terms of health and safety, and that's the big difference between the two. There's a big difference in how their grants are administered. The EPA grants that we work on are every year. They're small grants, $200,000 for 3 years. But they're granted every year, and it's a much smaller program. The NIHS grant is very large grants that are administered every 5 years, and there will be an announcement for an RFP coming out in June, and it's much more institutionalized than the EPA grant. It's very difficult to get an NIHS grant. Most of the money goes to labor unions, organized labor. Organized labor has lobbied very heavily in Congress. They get their money directly from Congress. The EPA grant comes from Congress, the EPA, to our program. In terms of NIHS, it comes directly from Congress as an appropriation. It's heavily lobbied by organized labor. And it's serving its purpose. Their purpose was to train as quickly as possible as many people to protect themselves in harsh environments and in health and safety, and they've done that. Organized labor was extremely effective in reaching to their members and giving them training in health and safety, and they protected hundreds of thousands of people. So their emphasis is different than ours. the reason I mentioned NIHS is you've heard it, you've heard about it, and you'll be hearing more about it, and we'll be talking more about it. The implication for our grantees are, one, while it's extremely difficult to get one of those main grants, there's maybe a dozen primary grantees that share all that money. Their grant system is set up that they have to have many partners, maybe 100 partners. So what they do is the money comes from NIHS to the primary grantees, and then it's doled out amongst many partners who are doing training. And this is where our grantees can get involved in partnering with NIHS grantees to do training and to leverage the work they're doing on the environmental job training from EPA and having another program with the NIHS program. And as long as it's a different demographic and a different part of the community, and if you're addressing different people, it's perfectly fine. We've had several grantees over the years who have had both programs, both in California and in Boston and in Chicago. We've had several that have operated both grants, and we'll talk about that because it's a way of keeping your EPA job training grant, but also perhaps expanding your program to include as a sub-grantee as part of the NIHS program. And as far as their program looks very similar to ours, they've got the same issues with recruitment, placement, curriculum that we do. So, well, we're over our time, and I don't think we got cut off. Is everyone still there?
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay. Next week we're going to talk to Ray, and we'll probably be talking about this whole idea of recruitment and assessment. And we've talked about it before. Clover Park does an awesome job. What we're noticing is different people in different parts of the country are using different approaches. I think we want to get into a little more detail about the different TAB levels, CSSA levels, look at that in more detail. So anything anybody want to bring up this week before we sign off? Everyone okay? Okay. Well, we want to keep these discussions short, so I hope everyone stays warm and gets home safely.
Yeah, you too, Mike.
Yeah, me too. I'm just thinking of that. Oh, I've got to brush off the car and go home. Okay, well, we'll talk to you all soon on the 26th.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you still have that Pathway to Prosperity notebook?
Yeah, I'm trying to see that I ever bring it in here or is it in my car. If I have it in here. What do you want out of this?
She was on the panel. What panel was she on? Was she on healthcare? They don't really care less, okay? Right now they're looking at your number. They don't really give a dang about what panel you sat on. Thank you.
question.